Guess what I was thinking about over the holidays as I was scanning through headlines and looking at the news and celebrating Christmas and getting ready for New Year's? I was thinking about the Titanic, and I don't know where I ran across it, and then I got into this whole thing with World War I. And so we're going to talk about the Titanic and World War I and Harbingers of Doom in podcast 790, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, we're just coming off Christmas, New Year's, the whole season. And one of the things that happens this time of the year is you get a lot of people in the house. And during this holiday time, you might have looked around and thought, we need more room. And this is the time of the year that you do that. And so it's a great opportunity for me to introduce Whitetail Builders advertising on the Bob Davis Podcast, because maybe 2019 is the year that you'll decide to finally finish the basement or add a bathroom, or if you're a guy, even finish the garage, because we all want the man cave that we've been talking about for years. Or think, you know, let's get rid of this rotting deck out back and replace it with something we can enjoy through the glorious summer months all the way into football weather. Or maybe you just bought a new house and it's time to make some improvements. So Randy at Whitetail Builders asks, what are your dreams? To build your dream, you need a builder who's going to be by your side from start to finish. That is Whitetail Builders. They're going to make sure your expectations are met. With Whitetail Builders, the process is just as important as the end results, and I'm happy to refer you to Whitetail Builders of Andover, Minnesota. They're online at whitetailbuildersinc.com. There's a contact page there. You can leave your name and number and tell Whitetail your dreams. Or you can call Randy Graybaugh at 612-282-8801. That's 612-282-8801. Whitetail is focused on the details. I know this because I know Randy, and I know people who have used Randy, and his work is really superb. You're going to love the results regardless of your dream. Whitetail Builders, helping you construct your dream. You can click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com or go to whitetailbuildersinc.com. Well, just three podcasts left before the end of the year, which is coming up fast as 2018 sinks into history. I have been really working to kind of work on content for these podcasts in a new way, which is to think about what I'm thinking about or take two or three things that I'm thinking about and kind of just put them together. And really, I will do at least one easy talker, which just talks about the headlines, but really getting away from the news headlines for several reasons. In the past year or so, 2 years, really, for most people, podcasters talking about things in the headlines, aka a la talk radio style spoken word, doesn't make much sense to me anymore, because we are able to get the news headlines easily and quickly, and we are able to listen to anything we want about the news headlines easily and quickly. Doesn't mean that I don't talk about stuff in the headlines, doesn't mean that I don't talk about stuff in the news, but I'm finding a lot of fun mining this area of content where I'm kind of monitoring what I'm actually thinking about and putting, as we all do, putting things together in our minds and thinking, you know, what are the connections? And what's unique about that is it is unique, because you're not going to put the things together that I put together. And maybe I can advance the story and make you think, because always I'm thinking more about society and the effects of politics on society that I'm actually thinking about politics, because of obvious reasons. Almost everyone's sick of it. There is very little I can tell you that you don't already know, and you don't really care to hear what I think about what is going on, because I'm not working at the White House or at the Pentagon or involved with some senator or, you know, knowing things on the inside. And even those who know don't know. So I'm loath to talk about it in a sense, the way we used to talk about it and the way you are forced to talk about these things on the radio, because people in radio seem to think that you're not allowed to talk about things that aren't in the headlines, or that it drives away the audience, or whatever the thing is. And I don't want to blame it on radio, and I don't want to go down that rabbit hole either. So I'm going to take two things that I've been thinking about in the last few days, and I'm going to do a podcast about it. Then I'll do an Easy Talker podcast. And we will close out the year with an end of the year kind of review for 2018 from the Bob Davis Podcasts.com perspective, and thank some people, and we'll reset and clear the decks, so to speak, for 2019. But here's what I've been thinking about. And I think it was YouTube started throwing videos my way about the Titanic. And one of them is really spectacular, and it is a virtual tour of the Titanic. And so I don't know, I was probably getting ready to go to sleep, or I was taking an afternoon nap or something, which is what I'm usually laying down. I'm looking at YouTube. So I watched this Titanic tour, and it's a virtual tour, and it's really well done. And I loved it. I didn't even watch the whole thing. The whole thing's like 18 minutes. I watched like 10 minutes of it, 6 minutes or something like that. And I highly recommend it. Hopefully I can find it and throw it up as a link. But it got me thinking about the Titanic and the disaster. It is the most well-known disaster, probably with the exception of 9/11. Now, the Titanic is probably the most well-known disaster in history. And we all know the story. I don't need to. We've all seen the movie. We've all seen the subsequent documentaries on finding the wreck and on and on and on. But the Titanic sank in the North Atlantic on April 15th, 1912. I find it interesting that, and before I did a little research for this podcast, but before I did the research, I was thinking that, you know, here was this period of time in which it seemed like these wonders of technology, which is high tech at the time, the Titanic and industry and airplanes and things of that nature were just amazing. And the technology had no limits and could do no wrong. And the Titanic was the ship that could not sink. And it represented the highest, reach of the British Empire at the time. I did not know that there are two other ships that were sisters of the Titanic, the RMS Olympic, which went on until it was finally scrapped in 1935. It did get into an accident with one of His Majesty's cruisers right before World War II in something like 1928 or 29 or something. And then there was another one, which I didn't even know about, which was the RMS Britannic, which was also sunk, and this one by a mine in World War I. Now, I'm not going to do the whole podcast about the problems that the Titanic had. My only interest was that the Titanic was this symbol of coping, this symbol of technology and advancement and industry. And at the time the Titanic was launched, as well as these other ships, Britain literally did rule the waves. The sun never set on the British Empire. They had India. They had possessions in Africa. They had parts of Indonesia, if not all of Indonesia. I don't remember. They had Hong Kong and China. The British Empire, with the exception of North America, which was still, the United States was still puny in comparison to the British Empire, was preeminent. And all of the monarchies of Europe, including Germany, were preeminent. By that time, you had a federated Germany, which was a significant power in Europe. You had France. All of these countries had possessions, colonial possessions in other parts of the world, flung across the world. And some of the things that kind of came about at that time, you know, aircraft, chemicals, concrete, and things like the Titanic, represented this peak of technology. And then without warning, the Titanic sank. Now, we know later that there was a coal fire in the bunker, which could have weakened the metal. And we also know that the ship used sub-quality brittle steel, which it was brittle because of high sulfur content, but I've also learned it was the best available at the time, and it's characterized, this high sulfur content is characterized by a low level of manganese. And what happens is at low temperatures, it cracks like glass. So the Titanic was roaring along at almost 23 knots, which is about 26 miles an hour. And the reason is that the only way to get rid of a bunker fire, this is when coal when cold air hits coal, it starts to, there's a chemical reaction that takes place. This is stuff I've read about since. I don't know this off the top of my head. And coal starts to heat up, and it can start a reaction and essentially start a fire. The only way to get rid of a bunker fire, there's really two ways. One is to get to the burning coal and shovel it into the furnaces so that you burn it. And that was what they were trying to do, and that's why the ship was running at full speed when it hit the iceberg. Most experts say that the iceberg is what caused the ship to sink, but these other factors, as with most disasters, it's one or two or three things. I think the plan was to try to get rid of as much as they could out of that bunker, and then when they got to New York, they were going to use the fireboats to, put water on it. But I didn't read much beyond that because I didn't want to make this podcast about the Titanic. It was a shock that this could happen. This was the ship that could not sink. This was the pinnacle of Western technology and British technology, which was the greatest country in the world at the time. And I think it's interesting because just two years later, we were submerged in the hell, literally, of World War I. And we're going to talk about that in the second half of this podcast. By the way, by the time you hear this podcast, I say this is the time of the year because this is the time of the year. It's going to be -2 at one point by the time you hear this podcast, right around the new year. And usually we go into a deep freeze. Last year, my heat went out. I have had water heaters go out. It almost always happens during the cold months because the cold is what puts stress on all of these systems that you have. And when it comes to keeping all of your systems running right these days at home or business, when you have plumbing or heating problems or air conditioning problems, what do you want? Well, you want reliable service, and that means you want Ryan Plumbing and Heating. In St. Paul, you can call 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in Frogtown in St. Paul, and they are metro-wide from St. Paul. So it doesn't matter where you live. Andover, where else have I been thinking about lately? St. Louis Park, Plymouth, Golden Valley, over on the east side of the metro, Inver Grove, West St. Paul, East St. Paul, South St. Paul, St. Paul, and then, of course, down in Burnsville and other parts of the metro. Ryan can get to you. Again, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. Ryan customers get priority on service. So if you have a job that they need to do, whether it's a bathroom, a toilet, or something like that, especially with toilets these days, don't try to do it yourself. They're cheap enough that having Ryan take care of your toilet problem is worth it. Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Now, the other thing that occurred to me about the same time I was watching the video about Titanic, there is a new movie which I will show. I'll throw up links to it. It's showing in three theaters in the Twin Cities right now, and it's showing in selected theaters. I believe that they're AMC theaters in most markets, but don't quote me on that, across the country. And this is a movie by Peter Jackson, who made all of the Hobbit movies. It's a long story, and I'm going to let him explain it in a second, but he's made this movie called They Shall Not Grow Old, which consists of restored and transformed World War I footage. I'm going to let Peter Jackson explain what the idea here was. He worked with the British War Museum to put this thing together.
Hello. I'm really excited to talk to you about a new project I've been working on with 1418 Now and the Imperial War Museum. The Imperial War Museum approached me a couple of years ago, and they asked me what could be done with their original First World War footage in a way, just to present it in a way that hadn't really been seen before. And I thought about all the digital technology that exists today, and can we restore that footage and make it look new and make it look sharp and, in a way that goes way beyond what has ever been done before. So we did some tests, and the results were I mean, they really surprised me. They were unbelievable. We can make this grainy, flickery kind of, you know, sped up footage look like it was shot in the last week or two. It looks like it was shot with high definition cameras. It's so sharp and clear now. And so we are making a film, and we're making a film, not the usual film that you would expect on the First World War. We're making a film that shows this incredible footage in which the faces of the men just jump out at you. It's the faces, it's the people that come to life in this film. It's the human beings that were actually there, that were thrust into this extraordinary situation that defined their lives in many cases. And we also, in accompanying these restored images, we have gone through about 600 hours of audio interviews with our veterans, you know, in the 1960s, 70s, 80s. And we have... We've made a movie which is to show the experience of what it was like to fight in this war, not strategy battles. You know, we don't talk about any historical, you know, aspects of the war particularly. We just talk about the social experience of being in this war, and the human experience of being in the war. And it's actually amazed me what some of these people, or what some of the veterans, I mean, their interviews I've never heard before, and they talk about it in a way that's surprising. We have a sort of a cliched version of the war, I guess. We now, 100 years later, we have made up our own minds what the First World War was like. But I think it's going to be very surprising when you listen to the voices of the men that fought the war and were there and experienced what they had to live it, what they had to eat, how they slept at night, you know, how they coped with the fear. And, you know, that combined with these incredibly sharp images is going to, I think, be quite a surprising film.
I want to see it because it brings this experience that we've only viewed in literally sepia brown pictures, very grainy black and white pictures, which don't move, and often were staged, and very bad film, which is not speed corrected and very shaky and grainy. And if you've seen any of the videos, and I'll throw a link up to that as well, of what Jackson has been able to do with this footage, it's stunning. Not just the actual film footage, but also the footage in terms of audio. There are some they've readjusted, they've moved audio in, and they have cleaned up the audio where there were audio tracks in the films, and it is really spectacular. I think it's one of the most amazing things that I have seen anybody do, and it's great because it's not a political movie, from what I understand. It's about the experiences that these young men had in World War One. World War One was a catastrophe. Anywhere between 8 to 10 million deaths, on a grand scale, far worse than the U.S. Civil War in terms of raw numbers. In terms per capita, the Civil War was also pretty bloody and completely unexpected. It was sort of like technology, high technology meets old tactics, and that's what happened in World War One. Nobody could have predicted or did predict that there would be trench warfare to the degree that there were, and nobody knew what to do about it. Anywhere between 8 to 10 million deaths overall, 23 million casualties, and these are just military casualties, and they were horrific. Lungs from mustard gas, skin burns from mustard gas, burns in general, legs being blown up, gangrene, gunshots, shrapnel, mines, disease, and all sorts of things. And many, many deaths also from disease. More Americans died from the flu in Europe and before they got to Europe than died actually in action, as far as I understand. France overall lost something like 1.2 million men. The British Empire lost 1 million, roughly. Germany lost 1.9 million. Russia lost 1.8 million. The United States, and it wasn't even in action until January of 1918, 100 years ago, when 101 years ago, when the United States first, you know, sent the expeditionary force to Europe. We did not even get into action until much later that year, and the war, of course, ended in November of 1918. So, the U.S. involvement in World War One, which they say turned the tide, I'm going to talk about that in a second, we were not in the war that long. And in 4 months, we lost 53,000 soldiers. It is said that the U.S. soldiers brought home H1N1, just a simple flu. This is what we deal with almost every year, although it might just have been airborne. My understanding is it also sailed with the troops across the Atlantic in 1917 and then came back in 1918 and 19. It killed 50 to 100 million people worldwide, on top of the 2.5 million civilians already killed during World War I. And there were other disasters at the time. I did a little quick search to see, okay, well, what other disasters were there that could have compared to the Titanic and World War I? And one of the things I found was the Eastland, which was a Lake Michigan, ferry boat of some kind that was sunk because it capsized because it was loaded improperly at boarding in Chicago. So here's where I'm going with this. I have this thing that I often, you know, I often say I can't predict the future. So the logic side of me, the logical side of me says, you know, you can only know what you know. You can't know things that can't be known. So you can't know the future. But then sometimes when you look back in the past, you see little indicators that should have been harbingers or warning signs. And of course, we don't know the future, so we don't pay any attention to warning signs, whether it's people who pull their money out of the market when it goes down or people who keep putting money into the market as it goes down, thinking that it's going to come back. You know, we keep making the same mistakes over and over again because we don't pay attention to the harbingers. And you have to do a lot of research, particularly on markets, to really get down into what the harbingers are or the indicators, let's say. That's a number that we would use today or a word that we would use today would be an indicator. And life is not pure math. Some people say it is, you know, and the logical scientific way of looking at it is saying, well, this is what we know. So this is what we know. We can't predict the future. We don't know which way the future is going to go. So this idea of predicting the future, particularly in politics or in society, is dangerous, and it's just really a parlor game. But it's the season for parlor games, so we may as well do it. And I would just ask some questions just for fun, because I think these are interesting things to think about when we're all off and we're kind of relaxing and we're wondering maybe about what's going on. And this is the kind of stuff I think about. I watched the videos about the Titanic, and I thought to myself, was this a supernatural warning, this Titanic? And of course, it was a disaster that happened because apparently, and it appears to be, you know, all of these big disasters, whether it's the Challenger or the oil spill down in the Gulf, you know, anything like that, they happen because two or three things go wrong and then it starts to cascade. So in the case of the Titanic, a number of things went wrong prior to it hitting the iceberg that created the conditions to create the disaster. And then I think, well, you know, that's kind of what you're supposed to look for, is things going wrong, and hopefully you can cut them off at the pass. If you watch movies or if you watch those TV shows on the Smithsonian Channel, Air Disasters, which is one of my favorite shows, it's all about one thing goes wrong, and then another thing goes wrong, and then another thing goes wrong, and next thing you know, you've got a disaster. So was the Titanic a harbinger of World War I? Just 2 years after the Titanic, the British and the French and the Germans marched blissfully into World War I, thinking that it would be over in August of 1914. They thought it would be over by November. As Americans did think about the Civil War, it was going to be a simple one or two set piece battles, and that was going to end the question, and that would end. But once engaged with the technology and the nature of the tactics, it became a massive disaster on a worldwide scale. And the result of that disaster was that an entire power structure, oddly enough, this is 100 years ago, oddly enough, very similar in some ways to our power structure today, in that only, you know, in that it was a monarchy. The whole of Europe was monarchies. There were elite royals in charge of these countries and all interrelated. The Kaiser, many people don't know, was the cousin of the Russian Tsar. And I believe they were related to King George through the German relatives in the royal family. So These people were all related that were in charge, but it was beneath the monarchies. It was the state departments and the bureaucracies and so forth, all the way down through the politics to the businesses. This elite conservative structure that from the 1850s, 1860s, and 1870s in Europe had experienced a resurgence, and it ended with this pre-war power structure that existed in Europe. And I think what I've read about World War One, and I've not read as many books about World War One as I have about the interwar period and World War Two and post-war, or the Civil War in the United States. But my understanding is that the British Army in particular was plagued by poor leadership, just really incompetent generals who did not question their orders. Colonels didn't question generals and so on down the line, and they just pushed men out into these frontal assaults on fortified positions, and they were mowed down and destroyed and killed in the millions, literally. The French were just as bad as the British in many ways. They could not figure out what to do about trenches. But and the machine gun, which nobody could have anticipated, because before the war, the machine gun had only been used in the Boer Wars, the Gatling gun in the United States, but that came after, really after the Civil War. And the Maxim gun was considered an artillery piece, and the fuddy-duddies at the top of the chain in the military considered them to be artillery and refused to use them as infantry weapons, which I thought was fascinating. And this is another example of poor leadership. They were big fans of the frontal assault and so forth and so on. Everybody pretty much knows this. If you don't, it's one of the key takeaways from the war. But I didn't know this until I read another book. The French are the ones who developed trench clearing tactics. The British did not. They actually trained the first special forces to clear the trenches. And the idea was they were going to train U.S. troops to join them in this effort. And Blackjack Pershing, who was the general in charge of the American Expeditionary Force, said, "My guys fight together or they don't fight." And so the French reluctantly trained the United States troops on trench clearing. We had a few other things at our disposal, the Thompson submachine guns, shotguns, and other things that helped us in that effort. And so we developed tactics. And the other tactic of the United States was we kept on the move. And so we had better results. But those tactics were developed by the French. And the other thing I learned from this very obscure book on World War One was the Germans had lost so many soldiers that they developed quick dry concrete so that they could create defensive structures, bolt their guns in and other stuff, and then unbolt and move them back if they had to retreat. And so the Germans were known for retreating in force to secondary positions where they had better vantage points and better fire zones so that they were able to save more lives toward the end of the war. And in fact, the Germans actually ended the war in a slightly better position than the French and didn't have to surrender the way that they did. At least that was the conclusion of the writer of this book. So that's World War One. It was a disaster, and it ended the power structure of Europe and led to the whole situation with fascism developing in Europe, economic depression, and then fascism, and of course the development of fascism in Italy first, and then in Germany, and of course Hitler, as well as communism in the Soviet Union, what became the Soviet Union. So it changed Europe substantially, losing that many people. It was a true disaster. And on top of that, the disease that came out of the war was even more of a disaster. And so I look at that, and I will conclude by saying and asking the question, what are the harbingers of our time that we're not thinking about? Because we're too busy paying attention to nonsense, to be quite honest with you. What are the harbingers of our time? The harbingers of disasters that they will say were biblical and predicted and that the conspiracy theorists will have a heyday with. For example, Chernobyl ended the Soviet Union. Chernobyl was a gigantic disaster. It's an ongoing disaster and has ended the Soviet Union to a certain degree, although the causes of the failure of the Soviet system were economic, but Chernobyl was a symbol of those failures. I look at 9/11 and I wonder, because 9/11 should not have happened in the United States. And we can all think of other things that are probably equally as interesting in terms of disasters, whether we connect them to future strife or not. World War I was a war fought with the greatest technology of its time, all brand new. The Maxim gun, planes, ships, quick dry concrete, chemical weapons, submarines, and so forth. Our time is fraught with some very interesting new developments, which we don't think very much about. Obviously, cell phones and cell towers and 5G and hypersonic planes and drones and robotics and artificial intelligence, biological weapons, self-driving cars, robotic soldiers, robotic equipment on the battlefield, and it could be argued a government of elites, professional politicians who rule at the behest of the bankers and the money people and the public-private partnerships and the stranglehold of control these elites have on non-elite U.S. citizens and citizens across the world. And I include that at U.S. and Europe and Russia and China. And I wonder, first of all, is that too harsh a characterization? I'm not sure. But that kind of elite leadership, where they're able to do what they want with impunity, doesn't always bode well for the future. Whether it is Roman history, Greek history, you know, 18th century, 19th century European history, or 20th century history of the disasters which occurred, because it's arguable that World War I and World War II were in some ways the same war, despite every effort by politicians and statesmen to prevent another war. So I would just end by saying, changes are coming. Are we ready? Well, between Black Friday and Christmas shopping and the day after Christmas shopping, so many things that people buy these days are commodities. You know, whether you pass a gas station and you don't care if you're going to Ashland or if you're going to Super America or if you're going to BP, one gas station is as good as any other. Same with coffee. Well, here's a question for you. When was the last time you bought a product or service somewhere and you thought, especially with local businesses, boy, I wish I'd have known about this 10 years ago. And that is something that somebody actually said about Johannken Jewelers in Crystal. And yet, this is key when it comes to the important things in your life, whether it's a wedding ring that you want to get resized, your great-grandfather's watch, or a Rolex that you need serviced, or the diamonds in your wife's wedding ring that you're afraid will fall out because they're not secure. This is what I mean when I talk about Johannken Jewelers in Crystal, Minnesota. This is the jeweler you can trust. This business has been in the same family since 1886. It is not a chain. Decidedly, Johannken's local family like the things that are important to you. They are known for rebuilding and repairing crowns and settings to perfections. They have great diamonds and gemstones, and they will spend time with you and talk to you about them and show you them. And they do any and all jewelry repairs to perfection. And really, the other thing, if you get over there, and I'll tell you where it is in a second, Johannken's does great watch restoration and service. I've seen their work, and they have this amazing selection of vintage wristwatches and timepieces. I was just watching Justified again, all the Justifieds, and one of the things Boyd Crowder has is this giant vintage watch that he carries around, and I think that is so cool, and they have a huge selection of these. You have to see them to believe. It's also a great place to get your Rolex serviced if you have one, and they have new watches as well. Check out johannkenjewelers.net, and you can also find them at 115 Willow Bend in Crystal. Call 763-537-7233. That's 763-537-7233. Or click on the elegant Johannken's Jewelers banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Don't forget, Ryan Plumbing goes metro-wide. They have a great website with lots of great content about plumbing, and you can find them at ryanplumbing.com. Good to know in case something goes down at the last second like it did for me on New Year's Eve. Eve at the stroke of midnight. I will never forget that. And thank God for Ryan Plumbing and Heating Up St. Paul. Okay, thanks for listening to the Bob Davis podcast throughout 2018 and looking forward to 2019 on iTunes. Tune in right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, stitcher.com. Tune in also works with Alexa, by the way. A lot of people are going, I'm going to get my podcast on Alexa. Well, in order to do it, you got to go through TuneIn, and we are on TuneIn. We're also at Spreaker.com, blogtalkradio.com, Google Play Music. I'm not sure where we're at with the app. I hear a lot of Android users talking about problems with Stitcher. Just go to blogtalkradio.com or Spreaker.com or googleplaymusic.com or Spotify, and Spotify works great. Thanks for listening to Podcast 790, the Bob Davis Podcast's Disaster.
Now here's a painting of a landscape. Now the artist who painted that picture says something is missing. What is it? It is I myself who was part of the landscape I painted. So he mentally takes a step back or regresses and paints a picture of the artist painting a picture of the landscape. But still something is missing. And that something is still his real self painting the second picture. So he regresses further and paints a third, a picture of the artist painting a picture of the artist painting a picture of the landscape. But because something is still missing, he paints a fourth and a fifth, until he paints a picture of the artist painting 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 a landscape.
So infinite regression then is...
It is the moment when our artist has regressed to the point of infinity, and himself becomes part of the landscape he painted, and is both the observer and the observed.
Well, now in that peculiar condition, what would he be observing if he were observing, let's say, time?
He would perceive, Mr. Barnes, that time is like a freeway with an infinite number of lanes.